Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, it's time to turn to a new book in JBL's series Around the World in Books. I think what we're about to read is a very engaging book. Now, it is another memoir, but I can assure you it's a much different memoir than Helen MacDonald's H is for Hawk. Now, remember the definition of memoir is, generally, a historical account or biography written from personal knowledge or special sources. So, the full title of the book that we are going to be discussing, of course, hopefully you've been reading it already, but the title is The Piano Shop on the Left Bank, : Discovering a Forgotten Passion in a Paris Atelier. And so, the book is by Thad Carhart. Now, I'm sure you're wondering, well, why did I choose this book? Now, it is about 17 years old, but I want you to know that this book was the bestseller in both the United Kingdom and America when it was first printed. And even though the book is, like I said, 17 years old, I think it's worth the time to read. And as we said last time, Helen MacDonald's book, I think, was just a fascinating study in human nature. But as Daryl Hope brought out, it was a memoir of misery. But this is going to be so much different. And it is a memoir of music, but it's more than just that. It's a memoir about the piano. It's a memoir about childhood. It's a memoir of finding deep friendship in a foreign country, and in the country that's not always so friendly to Americans visiting there. And it's a memoir of an American writer living in a quiet suburb of Paris on the left bank of the River Seine. Now, to me, I found it to be just amazing book. Now, I have to admit that when I first thought about the book and I first heard about the book, I wasn't so sure that I would like the book. For one reason, I don't play the piano. Now, I don't know much about the invention or the development of the instrument either, but I do love to hear piano music, and I do have my favorite pieces from Beethoven and Chopin and Bach, or as most Americans would say, Bach, but anybody really in the music industry would say Bach. But I am very much interested in the memoirs of writers, especially those who have spent time in Paris. And if you know anything about the early 20th century writers like Hemingway and Fitzgerald, they did spend, you know, time in Paris, and it was kind of like the in thing to do to go spend time in Paris. Now, I have visited Paris, and I have really enjoyed being there. My wife, Deborah, who will be joining us in a later program on this series, lived in France. She went to school in Praz-sur-Allier. And so she's very much familiar with Paris and really a lot of Europe as well. And so we were able to take two of our younger daughters to Paris for a trip. And Paris is it's called the City of Lights, and it really is kind of an interesting city. I just want to read to you from a few reviews of the book, and I'm not necessarily one that I just take everything that's said in a review. In fact, generally, I read a review of a book I really want to read first, and then I just want to see what they think, and I compare myself to what they think. And sometimes I think the reviewer gets it right. Sometimes I don't think they get it right, or at least for my taste in the book. But there was a really great review of the book that came out in The Guardian. That's a newspaper in the UK. And it was written by Stephanie Merritt. And I thought her title of her review was actually really pretty good. She calls it The Ebony and the Ecstasy. And so that's obviously, you know, a play on some other titles of films and movies and books. I think there was one called The Agony and the Ecstasy, and I think that was about, if I'm correct, and anybody out there listening can correct me, I think it was about the great artist Michelangelo. But she talks about this book, and of course the ebony would refer to the wood or the furniture related to the piano. And of course then the ecstasy, I think she's talking about what Thad Carhart went through rediscovering the piano. And he certainly had a love of it as a young boy, but he then developed this great love for the instrument and for piano music even as an adult. And it's really interesting, but he's a great writer, and he did not necessarily make his way in life as a writer. First of all, he spent a lot of time in business, but he always wanted to be, you know, in the writing field. And of course, he does have a passion for writing, and you can tell that as you read the book. But she starts out her review. This is the review, The Ebony and the Ecstasy. She writes, she gives you a quote from the book, and it's in the very first couple chapters. I know for those of you out there listening, you always want to find the quotes in the book, but this is in the first, she doesn't give the page number, but I know it's in those first couple chapters. And here's the quote, and this just shows what good writing it is. And again, the book is certainly, you know, it's about Paris as well. It's about being with the French people, and it's learning French culture and learning how the French do things. And so it's really, I think, has a little bit for everybody. And I'll even tell you before the end of this first program how it impacted my wife and I in terms of our desire to play music. Here's the quote, and this is a quote from the book. It says, "The narrow cobbled ruelles that lattice the left bank of the Seine conceal all kinds of treasures which the tourist, breezing past with map and rough guide, would never know existed. Half-hidden bookshops, cluttered galleries of maps and paintings, artists and musician studios, or workshops crafting anything from furniture to pianos." And so that really does describe, I think, some of these small, tiny little streets that you can find in Paris. There's, you know, a rue is a big street. A ruelle would be a smaller street, and they're still have cobblestones. They don't have asphalt in them. And when we went to Paris, we did spend a lot of time on the Champs-Élysées, but then we would take our daughters and we'd go off the Champs and try and get back in some of these streets. That's where you see the art of Paris. That's where you see, I mean, you know, Paris for what it really is, and its beauty and even some of its quaintness. And so it is really just a kind of a fascinating city. But it is very interesting how Thad does talk about, you know, what happened to him and when he was in Paris. It's an amazing history of his childhood, and His father was worked for NATO, and so he and his other siblings spent a lot of time, you know, in France. This is after World War II. Now, I'll be 65 in May, and I think Thad Carhart is about 2 years older than I am, so he's about 67 at this time. But he is, like I said, he's just a great writer. Actually, when the family was in Paris, he learned to speak French, and so he's fluent in French as well. And so he has spent time there as a child, and then he went back in his employment. He went back to Paris as an adult, and he had children of his own, and that's really how the book opens. But essentially, what happens is Carhart walks his children to school every day, so that they obviously, that they would be protected. And he finds this little shop, and it's really kind of a strange, unusual shop. And here's what Stephanie Merritt says. It says, "It was the latter that the American writer T.E. Carhart stumbled upon almost by accident Intrigued by the unassuming shop front, he passed every day that read simply, DeForge's Pianos, Outilage and Furniture. So he said, this is the shop he passed by, and it was on one of these little cobblestone streets. He lived in this quaint neighborhood that was, it was kind of far away from the hubbub of, you know, like the main city of Paris, and it was more of a sleepy area. And I'll read you a few quotes if we have time today to do that. But he was just really curious about this because he had been, when he was a child living in France, he had learned the piano. He'd learned how to play the piano, and he was taught how to play the piano from a French teacher, and so he learned all the words about music in French. And there he is in Paris. He went over and under his profession, and then he decided to leave his profession and become a writer. This was his dream, to do this all the time. And so, you know, it is really kind of interesting that in the early 20th century, it was the thing to do for writers. That was the big thing to do, was to write a book, maybe get famous, and then spend some time in Paris and write more books. And we know that Hemingway did that, F. Scott Fitzgerald did it, and they spent a lot of time in Paris. So when I first started reading the book, I thought, wow, I don't know if I want to read a book necessarily just about music or pianos. But then when I discovered the whole thing about, well, he left his profession and became a writer, and he was living in Paris, it just made it so much more fascinating for me. But one of the things he runs into right away, and this is what happens when Americans go to Paris. I know when we went to Paris so many years ago, my wife is fluent in French. And so when we could navigate the streets of Paris and navigate the taxis and navigate through the cafes and the restaurants really easily because she could speak French. And the French people are very personable when you can speak French. If you can't speak French, well, maybe they're not so nice, or maybe you don't feel like they're so nice. So how this book opens, and Merritt shows it very clearly, he was really curious about this little piano shop because from time to time he would see these trucks pull up and they'd unload pianos, but he never saw a whole lot of activity. You know, there wasn't people going in and out of the shop. So he ventured into the shop one day, and let me just pick up what she says. And this is a quote from her review. She says, venturing tentatively into the dingy little shop, heaped with piano wire and swaths of felt, he inquired whether he might buy a used piano and received a polite but cryptic rebuff from the old man who appeared from a mysterious door at the back. And so essentially, the guy said, no. No, I don't have any recommendations for pianos. And, in the very front of the shop, he didn't see many pianos. But there was this mysterious room in the back. And, he was really curious about it. But the one thing that Thad has to understand is that, and it really seems strange to him, but the way the French music culture worked there is you had to be recommended to be able to come in and buy a piano at that shop. Now, that's really kind of very off-putting for Americans. But he was persistent, like most Americans, and he kept going into the shop, and he wanted to get into this back room. And so what he does is he meets one of the piano technicians there, and his name is Luke. Now, here's what Merritt does reveal here. She says, Carhartt's book is the story of his relationship with Luke, the piano restorer whose craftsmanship and his love for his instruments seems to belong to another century, and with the curious assortment of people who, like initiates of a secret cult, are allowed into Luke's workshop to share their passion for the beautiful piano, some very valuable antiques, and that he nurses back to health. And so what she's saying here is that eventually Carhartt does develop this incredible relationship with this piano restorer. And there's a lot of discussions go on in the book about not only the value of pianos, but they really talk about a piano as being a live instrument. So one of the things we want to do with this series is I've invited Ryan Malone, who also has a radio program here at KPCG.FM. His program is Music for Life, and he's going to come in and talk to us about, you know, how to choose a piano and what it's like to have a piano. And this Luke, this man that Carhartt met in Paris, feels that they're like a living instrument, and that they choose you and you don't choose them. So it's really kind of fascinating, and it's almost a little bit very similar to what Helen MacDonald talked about in her book with Mabel the goshawk. Remember when she first went to see the hawk, she actually related immediately with the wrong hawk that was already promised to someone else. And then, but that's the hawk she related to. And the man that sold the hawk or sells hawks wasn't going to sell it to her because that hawk had been promised to someone else. And remember, she insisted, no, I have to have that hawk or no hawk. And so this piano restorer helps Thad Carhartt, who's once he gets into the shop and once he sees what's going on with the pianos and he learns about all the mechanisms and the inventions around the piano, then he actually helps him find a piano for himself. And he, as an adult, he starts taking piano lessons again. And so I think this book is really good for older people. It's really good for maybe seniors who are in the process of retiring. And what are you going to do in retirement? Well, maybe you want to take up the piano. Maybe you want to take up art. Maybe you want to take up something else in your childhood that you weren't able to do so well. What's wrong with taking the time to learn a language or to relearn an instrument or maybe get back into a passion that you lost because of, well, life happens. You know, my wife and I have just found this book really, really quite fascinating. And to be honest, we have a really nice upright piano, and it just sits there in our house, and it has to be retuned. It was her mother's, and her mother and father have both passed away, and we inherited this piano, and we haven't really spent much time with it. And after reading the book, we're saying, wow, we're going to get a piano tuner, and maybe we'll get some adult, learning piano instruction books and learn the piano. And so anyway, it is really quite an inspiring book. Now, here's another thing that she says, this Stephanie Merritt in her review. She says, the book unfolds slowly so that you may wonder after the first chapter whether Luke and his atelier, and that's like his, an atelier in French is more like an artist studio or a music studio, and that's just a French word, atelier. He said, so that Luke and his atelier can provide enough material to furnish an entire book. After all, there are so many ways to describe dusty sunlight falling on rich mahogany. So I don't necessarily agree with her on that. I mean, in some ways, I was a little reticent to start the book, but there were so many things that caught me. I mean, here Carhartt is changing a profession. Here he's walking his kindergarten children to school. He's passing bakeries. I mean, all of that kind of got my attention. And then I kind of lost my fear. Well, this is going to be about pianos and piano music. And if you remember when we were talking about H's for Hawk, Derry Hope brought up the fact that there were these three strands, or there was these three streams of consciousness in the book. And in many ways, this memoir is the same way. He does talk about piano music. He does talk about the instrument of the piano. But he weaves all these stories in from his childhood and from working with his parents and his family. And it really is fascinating. And again, just like Helen MacDonald, it's kind of seamless. It kind of catches you off guard. And then he has all these beautiful descriptions of Paris and, you know, of the neighborhood he lives in. It's really great that way. She goes on to say in her review, she says, between these personal stories lies perhaps the most fascinating part of the book. It says a potted history of the piano, and that just means like kind of like an ecstasy or this very intriguing history of the piano from its origins to its heyday in the mid to late 19th century. And I'll tell you, there are things that about pianos that I did not know until I read this book. And essentially, my wife and I, we've had this piano in our house. Her parents have died, and we inherited this piano. And my wife took piano lessons as a young child. I've never been able to take them and always wanted to. And we thought, after reading this book, we're going to get out the piano. We're going to open up the fallboard like Thad Carhart talks about. We're going to get a piano tuner. Maybe we're going to go buy some adult instruction books. So it has that kind of effect on you when you read it. So it's a really greatly written book, and it really does, you know, just get your attention. She goes on to say, this is a gentle meandering book, a collage of images, memories, and history. And at times, Carhart's effort to stuff these miscellaneous elements into a narrative feels a little strained. Now, that's her opinion. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think he's a great writer, and I love details, and I like the little details. Now, my wife is not so much into details, but maybe she doesn't like it as much, but I think it's great writing. But then she goes on to say, but the book is rich with understated evocations of Paris. Carhart has an eye for the salient detail that will conjure a person or a street vividly without tripping up an overwrought description. And it is. It's very simple writing, and it's very pleasant writing to read. In fact, I just want to just maybe read a couple quotes or one quote. I know we're going to run out of time here, but I think we could get through some of these things. This is on page 4 of the book for all of you that are out there listening. I know you've asked me to make sure I give you the page number so you can follow along. But here he's talking about the quiet streets of his neighborhood. And this is as Merritt said, it's great descriptions that he can give. He says, the quiet street was still out of the way and narrow enough to be paved with the cobblestones that on larger avenues in the city have been covered with asphalt. In the early morning, a fresh stream of water invariably ran high in the gutters, the daily tide set forth by the street sweepers who, rain or shine, opened special valves into the curb and then channeled the flow of jetsam with rolled-up scraps of carpet as they swished it along with the green plastic brooms. The smell from the local bakery always greeted me as I turned the corner, the essence of freshly baked bread never failing to fill me with desire and expectations. I would buy a baguette for lunch, and if I could spare 10 minutes before getting to work, treat myself to a second cup of coffee at the cafe across the street from the piano shop. So everything is kind of tied to, you know, the street where the piano shop's on. Here's another great quote, and this is beyond page 49. And this is just how he can describe, actually it's on page 48. Again, he describes some of the area where he's living. He says, our quartier is in a quiet part of the Rive, or the Rive, I'm going to mess up the French there. He's talking about a river. I'll let you read that for yourself. And its atmosphere is in many ways less frenetic than other parts of Paris. The Seine divides the city into roughly equal halves, north and south. And as you float down the river from east to west, the southern half is on your left, the left bank. This part of the city retains a quiet air, one less infused with commerce than with the narrow residential streets, numerous parks, and several of the urban campuses of the University of Paris. Although much of it has been gentrified and real student poverty is as distant as Puccini's La Bohème, artists and artisan, craftsmen and skilled laborers still can be found in many of its neighborhoods. The building we converted into our apartment had been a carpentry shop in the 19th century, and its high ceilings and multiple skylights suited my wife's work as a photographer. Luke's atelier was hidden, but as I came to know the neighborhood better, I realized that it really wasn't surprising that his activities should find a home in this quartier. So he's talking about that neighborhood. And again, that's another great description. And of course, you can read yourself his description of where Luke works. And it's an absolutely amazing studio. And it has a glass ceiling or a glass roof on it. So all this sunlight just streams in over the pianos. Now I just want to read one more quote. And again, this is about Paris in the fall. And this is on page 64. It says, as summer turned into fall, the neighborhood streets assumed the changes, both big and small, so characteristic of Paris at the season. The cafes at the corners of the boulevards pulled in their aprons of outdoor tables, leaving only one or two rows for the stalwarts who took their coffee in the undying hope of a ray of light through the gray-blue clouds. Along the avenues, the opposing rows of chestnut trees faded into a rusty brown and reluctantly gave up their leaves. Their overarching green tunnels turned into long black nets of branches. The chestnuts littered the pavement in the evening to be swept into the gutter's remorseless tide at the following break of day. In front of the elementary school, the sidewalks showed only leaves and husks, since the boys raced to collect the hard brown spheres, perfect for throwing, as soon as the bell rang in the late afternoon. And so there is another great description. So I really, really hope, and I'm really asking you to, if you haven't bought this book, to go ahead and buy it. Like I said, you can get a very inexpensive copy of it on ABE at abebooks.com. And then also, I just want to let you know that for next time, we are going to interrupt our series on the piano shop on the left bank. I am going to be inviting my wife and Daryl Hope back. Actually, Derry is traveling internationally right now, and so I have to give him some time. But next week, we're going to have a very special program. There is a new study come out from Britain about reading and the importance of reading, and it's very current, so I thought you'd enjoy that. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcug.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.